how to juggle being a wife, mom, and med student. That's the topic for today's show. Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for this 148th episode of Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get that delightful instant when you can jump up and down and shout, "Yes, I'm in," and not only in, but in at the best program for you. Being a new mom is demanding. Applying to medical school, not to mention attending it, is demanding. And yes, being a wife, and I imagine a husband, is also demanding. How can you combine all three commitments? Well, Dr. Jasmine Johnson combines them all and juggles being a wife, mom, and MD. Her first child, a son, was born as she was applying to medical school. Today, she's an OBGYN resident at UNC Chapel Hill. Let's find out what happened in between that first pregnancy and her work today as a resident. Jasmine, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. I'm looking forward to our conversation. Now, can you give us a little background regarding your path to medicine and residency at UNC Chapel Hill?
Sure. So I am the daughter of a urologist. And so I think that my first exposure to medicine was kind of going with my dad on the weekends to rounds. So that would be kind of how we could spend time with him, by sitting in the nurse's station and waiting for him to finish seeing patients. But I think that, you know, that kind of carried me through high school and going into college. There really wasn't anything else I saw myself doing. I really enjoyed writing, but medicine was always my first love. And so, after going to college at the University of Michigan, I, you know, off the bat was on this pre-med track. I majored in brain behavior and cognitive science, which is kind of like a combination of biopsychology and neuroscience. I really liked psychology classes too, so it was a good way to like meld both of them and the best of both worlds. My senior year at Michigan, I actually found myself pregnant. And so I had my son, Nate, the January of 2009, which was my senior year. And I would be graduating that May. And so the summer before senior year started, you know, I was working on applying to medical school and taking the MCAT and all of those things. And of course, with this big life-changing event, things just kind of got sidelined, but I also knew that I still wanted to go into medicine. I didn't want to defer, you know, my application for a year. I wasn't sure about how I was going to do this, but I knew that I wanted to keep going. So kind of just on a prayer, I was like, well, I'm just going to continue this cycle and see what happens. I did some interviews, but unfortunately I didn't get admitted to medical school that first time around, but I was accepted into a post-bac program at IU. It's called the Master's in Science and Medical Science program. And so the program itself was targeted towards people who had applied to medical school and their application for whatever reason just needed to be strengthened a little bit. So like for me, I feel like my MCAT score was lacking the first time around. And so they actually do this really intensive 8-week MCAT preparation course where you retake everything. And so that made a huge difference when I took the MCAT the second time. And then you also, during their program, the first year, you actually do the first year of medical school courses. So I got to do gross anatomy and microbiology and some biochem. So that was great too, because I think that going into medical school with a child kind of poses its own challenges, and just making sure that I was prepared for the rigors of the curriculum was really helpful doing that program. So some people do the program for 2 years and afterwards you get your master's, but a lot of the students that do that program actually start applying again the first year after, like myself. And so the second time around, I was accepted to IU for medical school, and we all matriculated at that point. My husband at the time was actually still living in Michigan, so it was just me and my 5-month-old moving to Indianapolis for the post-bac program. And then we got married right before medical school started. So it was quite a whirlwind. There are a lot of big life changes happening in addition to medical school, but we made it through. And then I went through third year and did my rotations and fell in love with OBGYN. It was actually my last rotation of third year, so it wasn't like one of those decisions I walked into medical school knowing that I wanted to pursue, but I'm so happy I did. I feel like I was totally in the midst of my people and my calling when I was on my OBGYN rotation, and I matched up my number one program at UNC Chapel Hill, and the rest is history. Really enjoying myself. Thank you. Thank you.
That's great. Now, let's go back a little bit. We'll get up to today also, but let's go back in time a little bit to when you were applying. Did you apply in parallel to post-bacc programs while applying to medical school? I mean, were you concerned about your MCAT score all along? Were you considering osteopathic options or other options as well?
Mm-hmm. I didn't really consider osteopathic options. And honestly, I didn't start thinking about post-bacc programs until kind of later in the application cycle when I wasn't getting interview invitations as I anticipated. But I honestly did not apply directly to any post-bacc programs, and mainly because just the distribution of the programs with regards to like where I had support and where I thought would be a good fit financially as well, because that's a huge investment. They just didn't pan out. And so I was kind of trying to juggle plans B, C, and E, B, sure. C, and D in my head as far as what would be. And IU kind of put their post-bac letter with their letter of rejection. It was kind of like, no, we don't think you're a good fit for class this year, but we have this program, and if you're interested in considering it, it starts 2 weeks from the day of this letter. it was a quick decision. But I think that post-bac programs are an excellent alternative. You know, if you go into it, and I think that if I had had a little bit more kind of foresight as to how strong my application was going in, you know, I knew my MCAT score was kind of median range. It wasn't the most competitive, but it wasn't the least. But I think that just considering everything else in conjunction with like my science GPA, there were definitely areas where I could be more competitive. And so I think that applying to a post-bac program off the bat in conjunction with, you know, med school applications is smart. It's not something I did, but looking back on it, it probably would have been a good idea too.
It's something we sometimes advise applicants to do, obviously depending upon their numbers. Now, is the IU program only for Indiana residents, or is it for people from around the country, out of state also?
No, there were students from out of state in that program too. We had students from all walks of life. One of my classmates who went on to be one of my medical school classmates, he actually had a full-fledged career and then decided, you know, he wanted to go back to medical school. There were people from Texas and international students. So it was open to everyone. A lot of post-bac programs, which I don't know, you guys probably touch on this too. Some of them target certain demographics. Right. So there are post-bac programs I'm aware of that target like first generation college students or first generation medical, you know, people going to medical or underserved backgrounds. And so you have to kind of look at the fine print that way. But IU, their program, I believe, is pretty general admission at this stage in the game. So
some are more geared towards career changers, like the gentleman you just mentioned, and some are more geared to academic enhancers, people who you know, maybe struggle a little bit in their undergrad or struggle with the MCAT. And apparently this program, at least in terms of the MCAT, really helps out with that one. So
absolutely.
We know that based on your comments, I assume that the MCAT was a real tough point in your application process. Was there anything else that you found particularly difficult in the application process?
I think that outside of just kind of beefing up my numbers, because, you know, you compare yourself to everyone else and you're on all these forums and everybody's talking about their scores and you're getting really, really, you know, depressed about kind of where you stand of things. I think that just, you know, being a new mom, I was unsure as to where I wanted to take that in my application process. Sure. If I wanted to have full disclosure and say, you know, yes, I'm going to have an 18-month-old when I start medical school, or if that would be kind of a weakness and I needed to scale back on the mom stuff. So for me personally, just because I wasn't sure how things were going to shake out, I definitely was more conservative as to how much I brought up my family life during my application process. And I didn't really talk about it in my personal statement. Fast forward to residency applications, it was totally different. You know, I talked all about that, but I think that's a big decision that parents have to make, non-traditional students, when they are applying. And I think that, you know, because the face of medicine is changing. And at that time, I was a little bit concerned about who was reading my application and kind of what type of background they had, and if they were cool with the idea of a working mom, or if they were still thinking about how, you know, women needed to be in the home and they weren't the primary breadwinners and that type of thing. So I just wanted to tread lightly. Looking back on that, I probably was over concerned about it, because everyone that I've interacted with on the various interview trails have been super impressed by the ability to have such a diverse background and manage both. But I think that was one of the bigger hurdles during my application process.
You can imagine also it's hard to kind of close off that very important area of your life if you're supposed to be open and sincere and authentic and transparent and all that kind of thing. If exactly. Medical school applicants come to you today and they have a child, would you advise them to follow your path, or would you advise them to be more open?
I think, and I was thinking about that too, because I think that I blogged about it before and I was like, well, I didn't really talk about it. But, you know, looking back on that today, I think that it's still a personal decision, but I feel like it's definitely a strength. If you are able to get this far in your education and you have all of these other commitments in your life that you're simultaneously juggling, that definitely makes you stand out. And so I think that talking about how your role as a mom or a dad has prepared you for medicine, or makes you more empathetic, or, you know, you'll be able to relate to other parents, whatever that may be, I think that it's definitely something that you can play up as a strength in your application.
It's also a tremendously maturing experience.
Exactly. Yeah, it definitely is. And that's not to say that people that aren't parents don't have good empathy and patient relation skills, but sometimes I feel like there's just a certain degree of efficiency that you have to have when you're a parent, because it seems like without fail, when you're trying to plan something, your kid has a totally different idea of what needs to happen.
Right. Or what I meant in terms of maturing was responsibility in general matures people. So people coming out of the military, especially who've had leadership roles in the military, tend to be much more mature than people the same age who have not had that kind of responsibility.
Exactly.
And as a parent, you are suddenly responsible for another life.
Right. And that life does not care that you have an exam.
Or that you're tired. Or that you're tired.
Totally.
So anyways, let's think again, we're still in the application process, and think back on your medical school interviews. What was for you the hardest or most memorable question you were asked?
Most memorable question.
Or hardest, everyone.
Yeah. So one of the hardest questions I was asked, and I tell people this all the time, they asked me to explain like a semester in undergrad that wasn't my strongest. Mm-hmm. And so I think that just being prepared to answer a question that may make you uncomfortable or put you on the spot, and being able to, again, play up your strengths with that experience. So that one was really memorable to me because it was so blunt and forthcoming. She was just like, what happened sophomore year that semester? And I just had to explain. And so I think that also will make you look good if you know that there's a part in your application that isn't as strong as the other parts, that's going to stand out as well. So being able to talk about that and discuss how that was a growing experience for you, or how you made adjustments and you have now rectified that, you know, that shows growth and maturity as well. Other questions that were difficult during the interview process. I think that the question, if you didn't do medicine, what would you do, was particularly difficult for me because it was something that I felt I wanted to do since I was like 7 years old. So I really had no other career idea. So, you know, just thinking about what you would say if someone said that, or, you know, whether it's going to be doing medical writing or something that still has you connected to the field that's not that field. Because I think that that's just a question to kind of get you to think outside the box, not necessarily because they don't think that you're going to be a doctor, but just to see how you think on your feet. So being prepared to answer questions like that are always good.
Right, right. Absolutely. Just getting back to the point about the GPA. The dip in the GPA, I think both points you made actually were excellent points. But on the GPA one, I think it's really important that anybody who had a dip like that or had a bad semester be able to provide not so much an excuse for what happened, but context.
Exactly.
You know, provide the context so that the admissions evaluator can understand what happened then. And basically decide whether they want to disregard it because it was anomalous. I had a podcast that dwelt heavily on this. It's you can find it at accepted.com/137, and I'll also link to it in the show notes. But I think that's a really, really good point. And I think your other point about being prepared to answer what would you do if you couldn't do medicine is again, just excellent advice. It's quite possible you're going to get that question. And it's not even that, I'm not sure that I would agree with you. It's much, can you think outside the box, but are you realistic? Do you have other interests?
That's true. Right?
So anyway, I think, again, both are great pieces of advice. Now, you indicated that after the post-bac program, you had a higher MCAT. Was there anything else that changed that you feel contributed to your acceptance the second time around?
I think the MCAT score was the significant boost. And then also, like I said before, we did the first year of kind of med school classes. And so that impacted my science GPA as well. And I think that helped. The program I did, I'm not sure how well known it is, but when I applied to the different medical schools, at least where I got interviews, IU being one of those schools, they were familiar with it and they were familiar with students that had done that program. So the reputation of the program, I think, also helps. But primarily it was the MCAT score, doing the science courses to help my GPA. And then, of course, once I actually got into medical school, I think that I was a significant boost. You know, looking back on it, I realized I probably was not ready for medical school if I had gotten into a school that first year. Just with so many things going on in my life, it was just good to have my bearings. And so I think being realistic about you being ready for that next step to go into medical school, because you don't want to just get in and then be hanging on by by a thread, but you want to get in there and you want to thrive. And so that also takes a certain level of maturity. And that's something, you know, it's easy to be the Monday morning quarterback and say, oh, well, I should have done this. But hopefully that's helpful to someone else, you know, looking back and saying, okay, if I was to get into medical school right now, how prepared do I really feel? And of course, there's only so much you can do to feel ready. But if you can do anything to get ready and better yourself for that, then I say go for it, you know, even if that means deferring a year.
Sure. Now, you ended up, we're going to move forward now, okay? You matched at your dream residency in OBGYN. First, what appealed to you about OBGYN? Why did you choose that one?
Yeah, so I really liked women's health. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I tried to take notes about when I was going through third year was kind of what I liked about each specialty as I was going through it, because I just knew I would forget. And the AMC,
by the way, that is a great thing to do for anybody approaching residency. So as you're doing your rotations third year, take those notes. Go ahead. Sorry for interrupting.
No, it's okay. The AANC website has this like form that you can fill out as you're going through clerkships, and it just basically asks basic questions about like what you do on the day-to-day basis and what you liked and what you didn't like and the various fields you can practice in within that specialty. So it was good to keep that fresh in my mind. And one of the pieces of advice that an attending had given me in medical school about picking a specialty was, you know, everything during your third year rotations is so exciting and so new, and everything's just like, oh, this is great, this is awesome. And you want to pick something where when that starts to become mundane, when that becomes your day-to-day routine, and it's not special or new anymore, is it still something that you're okay with getting out of bed and doing? And so I think that that was really great advice, because you have to think about, okay, well, I like, you know, I don't know, stitching up wounds is super fun in medical school because it's something you've never done before. But when that's all you're doing all day, or that's just kind of run-of-the-mill stuff, is that something that you're still okay with doing? And so OB was one of those moments for me where I felt like, you know, delivering babies is a lot of fun. But I also love talking to women about different phases in their life and, you know, how they feel like they are mentally juggling their new role as a mom, or, mm-hmm. you know, if they're not a mom, how they're juggling their job and managing their health and different things that I can do to help make whatever life transition they're going through more smoothly. It just really appealed to me. And it's probably just because I am full of, you know, oversharing, and I really have no boundaries when it comes to talking about my personal life. And so I felt like it was a good fit for me. I really like surgery, but it's not something that I want to do every single day. And OBGYN has a huge outpatient component as well. So, yes. You know, you can go one day in the clinic all day, and then the next day you're in the OR all day. The next day, you know, if you're in an academic setting, you can be teaching. And so there's just so much variety. And also, if for a mom, even though there are people that still think that OBGYN isn't very family friendly, but there is a lot of freedom to kind of tailor your practice to how you want your lifestyle to be, whether or not you want to be on call every weekend, or if you would like to spread that out a little bit, if you want to be in a big practice or a little practice, if you just want to teach, if you just want to do obstetrics versus gynecology. So just having all of that flexibility was so appealing, in addition to the fact that I just love the field itself and everything that I was learning about.
That's great. Okay, good. Now, why do you, this is probably hard to be a little bit objective about, but you matched at your number one choice for residency. Mm-hmm. To what do you attribute that success? And congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I wish I could say. Sometimes I still kind of stand in disbelief. I'm like going to work and I'm like, this is so amazing. It's a huge blessing. And I think that, you know, it had to do with the fact that I was a pretty competitive applicant, I think.
Obviously.
I also feel like my extracurricular interests. So my blog primarily was something that I started before medical school. And then I blogged through medical school, and it got pretty popular to the point where I was blogging for IU, and I had done a few interviews and different things like that. And so I talked about it in my application process. I included it on my resume. And so I think that that helped to make me stand out as an applicant. One of the things that OBGYN, I feel like, kind of stands out, and it could just be me being biased. But I think that they really appreciate applicants that are very diverse in their background, applicants who are relatable, because obviously you're talking about very personal things with your patients, and sure, being able to feel like someone can talk to you about something that they might not share with other people goes a long way. And so, honestly, I think that that was really helpful, in addition to just kind of the regular stuff, making sure your application from an academic standpoint stood out. Right. My step scores were very competitive for OBGYN, and so that all helped get me to where I wanted to be.
Okay, great. Now, you just mentioned to your blog, and I could have set you up for this, but actually I plan to start asking you about your blog. So let's turn to your blog, The Mrs., The Mommy, The MD. Why did you start blogging?
I started blogging mainly it was because I had my son Nate, and my husband and I are both from, we have a lot of extended family in Michigan. And since I was starting medical school in Indiana, we weren't going to be able to share kind of our son's growing up toddler baby phase with our family. And so I just wanted to have a place where people could go and see what we were up to and take lots of pictures, which we love to do.
Sure.
And so that was how it started. I think it kind of took off on its own because I also was going into medical school with a child and I felt very isolated. I felt like there weren't a lot of people that were going to be in the same scenario as me. And
were there any other mothers in your class at Indiana?
There were. There's a lot more than you would think. And they had children at all ages. You know, there were women who had newer children, younger than Nate, so like earlier baby phase. And then I had a classmate who had three children, and they were all like grade school age. My friend that did the post-bac with me, he had two kids. One of them was a little bit older than Nate, and the other, they had like a new baby before we started medical school. So definitely a lot more family friendly than you think. But still there weren't a lot of us.
So I
kind of started looking at these mommy bloggers, and, you know, everyone's like awesome when it comes to like crafts and doing good things with their kids and making, you know, running a house look so easy. And I was just like, where are the mommy bloggers that are in professional school? and so I was like, well, this is a niche. Maybe I could start. Maybe someone cares. And so I started talking a lot about medical school and talking about my experience as a mom and giving advice. And so it kind of took off on its own. It went from me just kind of talking about our family life to a much broader scope. And I was able to kind of pull in other moms. You know, I think that when you're deciding whether or not to pursue medical school or whatever, and you have children, one of the most encouraging things is to see someone else doing what you are planning to do. Absolutely. I know that was something I just clung to when I was going through this. And so I tried to create a space where you could see it in action. And I tried to pull other moms in that weren't just OBGYN residents or weren't just me, so that people could see that there were other ways to do this too. And so that was what my main goal was. And I hope I'd achieve that. It's still a work in progress.
Blogs always are. Websites, they're definitely never finished. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's how it got started. And it's interesting how it took off. And it's also fascinating that being a medical student, being a mom, being a wife, you found time to blog. but this is the big question, right? How do you do it? How do you balance, juggle the commitments that are involved in basically the, you know, your URL, Mrs. Mom MD?
Well, lots of prayer, first
okay.
of all.
Okay.
I wish I could take credit for it, but honestly, I feel like the secret is in having just an awesome support system. Yes, there's lots of multitasking involved. Yes, there's lots of staying up late. But when it comes down to it, just recognizing that I can't do it by myself. And so, you know, one of the things that you kind of need in place is just whether it's a supportive partner or family members that are supporting this goal, someone to kind of stand in the gap for you when you have commitments outside of the home that kind of stretch you a little bit further than what you would like. And so I think that recognizing that early and making sure that I had those people in place. And a lot of times asking for help for me was very difficult. And so I was very fortunate to have people that just volunteered. My mom, my husband's mom would take my son for my exam weeks. And that would give me, you know, a guilt-free week where I knew that he was being loved on probably more than more than his parents
spoiled
were doing. Exactly. Well, rotten. So he was not
That's what grandparents are for.
Exactly.
Speaking as a grandparent.
Yes, and we love you for that. So he was not thinking about mom not coming home for dinner because he was totally distracted by all of the grandma love. And my husband too, you know, his job was demanding in of itself, but he, during my rotations, bore the brunt of picking up from daycare by that 6 o'clock hard and fast rule or dropping off, you know, when I wasn't able to. And he still is my rock today. So that's huge. You know, there's no way I could do it without other people helping.
May I ask what he does? with this professionally?
He's a mechanical engineer.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so he works Monday through Friday. His hours are after sunrise, and he gets off, you know, by 5. So it's good. It works for us right now. But definitely, he's got his own career that he's trying to advance. So I'm very grateful for him.
Sure. Sure. Mm-hmm. And all right. So basically you turn to and you look for help when you can find it. And are you like setting, how do you make time? I mean, couples need time too. You and your husband need time.
Absolutely.
I mean, without being a doctor, just the mommy and the missus part, when my children were young, it was hard to carve out time for me and my husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It still is. That's something that we're still learning. We've been married, but we'll be 6 years married in April. And we still are working through, you know, making sure that we prioritize a date night for ourselves and figuring out ways to spend time together, you know, when we can't get out. And so that's something that we're constantly working on. And I think that as residency has gone on, I've gotten better at that. You know, you get very consumed with new hours and changing rotations. And so I think that as a whole, I'm getting better at being more conscientious about it. I think that even if you can't meet the mark that you had set for yourself and your goal that month, just being aware of it and communicating with your partner and saying, hey, I know that things are really stressful right now, or I haven't been able to do A, B, and C, but I am thinking about it. I'm working on fixing it. And so, you know, just working together is really important.
Right. Do you feel that the tips that you're giving here in terms of asking for help, communicating with your spouse, making time for your spouse could apply just as much to a male listener who could be contemplating a blog called Mr. Daddy MD?
Absolutely. I think that would be amazing if there was a Mr. Daddy MD. I think dads don't get as much credit as they should. You know, I think that we just assume that it's easier for a dad going through this process, but I think it's just as hard for them. And dads are trying to kind of make their way and navigate just as much, you know. This is such a steep learning curve, being a parent.
Oh, yeah.
And medical is a huge learning curve. And so just keeping that in mind, I think it crosses dad versus mom roles.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Being kind to yourself and allowing yourself room to make mistakes and grow is totally, you know, imperative for either mom or dad.
Okay. Now, you recently were interviewed by Dr. Andrea Tooley, whom I actually interviewed for Mission Straight Talk episode number 95, and we'll link to that episode. And in your interview with Dr. Tooley, you urged other mom MDs to network and to work smarter, not harder. Can you elaborate a little bit? I mean, I know part of it is asking for help. Part of it is communicating with your partner. But in terms of working smarter, not harder, can you give a couple of examples, perhaps?
Yeah, sure. Well, my friends and family kind of laugh at me because I feel like, yes, I'm trying to break down all of these, like, gender role stereotypes and be this like woman dominating my field. But like, I am very domestic at heart, and I would love to just make dinner for my family and have my house being clean and making sure the laundry is done. And so, so you, that's a priority for me. You know, I don't do much cooking. My husband is the best cook, so I just kind of defer that to him. But one of the things that I started doing when my son was very little, I got these like organizers for his closet. And so on Sunday, that was my laundry day, where I would iron for the week, make sure all the clothes were done. And I would basically lay out his outfits from underwear to socks all the way, all the way through Sunday to Sunday. So that it just made our morning routine a lot easier. We weren't running around looking for clothing. And so that was one of my kind of time-saving tips. As far as other things, just not reinventing the wheel. I think that talking to other moms or dads about what they use for childcare is really important. And, you know, you kind of have to reevaluate your childcare on a constant basis, because sometimes it just doesn't work out. But figuring out, you know, if there's a home daycare that people really like to use, if there's a nanny people recommend, if there's, you know, a co-op type situation where you have someone's spouse watching their kids and they're willing to take on more children in the home, all of that stuff you never find out about unless you ask. And so you can spend hours upon hours looking for childcare if you don't reach out to other people and figure out what's already been figured out and what's already been done. As far as studying in medical school, just being able to speak up and say, hey, you know, I know you did really well on step one. What was your study schedule? And not trying to build one from the ground up, you know, doing what has worked for someone else can save you so much time and make you so much more efficient. So.
Okay. Sounds good. Now, where do you see your career going in the future? You see yourself pursuing a fellowship and a subspecialty, or do you see yourself going into practice, and where do you see it going?
Ultimately, I want to pursue a fellowship in maternal fetal medicine. So I want to do high risk obstetrics, which is 3 years after OBGYN residency. And so I really like obstetrics, and I really like the complexities. Sorry.
Okay. This is a podcast from, you know, Mommy MD. So we got the mommy part.
So I really like the complexities of just like women with multiple medical problems that also are pregnant. And so, you know, managing diabetes in pregnancy, managing women who have liver failure and, you know, are still pregnant, or kidney disease, all of those things, are really interesting to me. And so, it just seemed like a great fit, and we'll see. I don't know. I would love to take my blog, on a greater scale and maybe use something in the media, but we'll see how that pans out.
Okay. Any last bits of wisdom for pre-meds or residency applicants now that you are well into your residency, your second year in your residency, right?
Yes. Yes. In the second year. Right. I'd say the biggest word of encouragement is just don't get so distracted by what other people are doing and just stay in your lane and run your race. You know, we are so busy comparing ourselves to other people that we sell ourselves short and don't think about how much of an asset we can be to a program or to a school. And so just making sure that you stay encouraged and don't get down on yourself is huge, because, you know, there's a certain formula when it comes to going to medical school. We know we have to do well on certain exams. We have to do well in certain classes. But making sure that we still have confidence at the end of the day in ourselves and our abilities is so important, because that's what's going to stick with us when we get to medical school, and the same strategies that we applied in our application process will continue to carry you far, because obviously getting into medical school is just the first step, but there's so much more that you still have to do. So making sure that you just stay positive and acknowledge all that you've accomplished thus far and keep going.
Yeah, excellent advice. Jasmine, thank you so much. I appreciate all our guests taking the time to speak with me, but now that I have a greater understanding of the demands on your time, assisted by your daughter, I'm even more appreciative. I'm even more appreciative than usual. Thank you so much for joining me for this podcast. Where can listeners find your blog and learn more about you and your juggling?
Well, you can find me. I blog at MrsMommyMD.com, and you can find me on Instagram at the same handle. And if you have any questions about OBGYN, residency, anything like that, you can email me from there.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. We're going to link from the show notes at exceva.com/148 to MrsMommyMD.com and related resources discussed during the show, as well as some that I think are relevant but didn't get mentioned for one reason or another. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 148th episode. If you found this show worthwhile, please make sure you don't miss any in the future. Subscribe through your favorite podcatcher. We have subscribe links in the show notes at exceva.com/148. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.